Welcome to Wildlife Rehabilitation from Rescue to Release, a podcast dedicated to licensed wildlife rehabilitators and the veterinarians who support them. I'm your host, Gail Buell.
Techniques we discuss here are meant for licensed wildlife professionals. If you aren't licensed and trained for wildlife rehabilitation, do not attempt to capture, hold, or rehabilitate any wild animal. If you find an injured wild animal, a wildlife professional can recommend next steps. We will tackle topics about rescue, care, management, reconditioning, and releasing wildlife found in North America. This is a deep dive into each subject. We hope to give rehabilitators information they can use because they're already going to great lengths to rescue and nurse animals back to health. There are three possible outcomes in wildlife rehabilitation: release, euthanasia, and placement. An injured or orphaned wild animal's journey to restored health and independence in their natural habitat is delicate and complex. We draw techniques and expertise from many disciplines. Many animals brought into rehabilitation cannot be saved. The last gift we can give them is humane euthanasia. We'll talk more about when this is necessary. Sometimes animals are deemed non-releasable and evaluated to be suitable for a life in captivity. When that happens, we shift to a long-term approach to managing their care, training, and housing. Some such animals serve as ambassador animals, a term for animals that rehabilitators use to educate the public. Each episode, we'll speak with experts who represent specialty topics across the profession of wildlife rehabilitation, ambassador animal care and management, showcasing best practices.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is part two of my recent talk with Amanda Nicholson, social media guru and senior vice president of the Wildlife Center of Virginia. In part one, episode 13 of this season, we covered a lot of ground, including a working definition of social media, choosing and using the right platforms, and even how to handle trolls. Now we dive into some specifics about social media content strategy, social media as a tool for fundraising, and measuring impact of your efforts. So let's jump right back into the conversation. With the posts, you know, you can write the post, you can choose the pictures, you can have it evaluated if you need to or want to. And in fact, I have done that for, and I'm an independent rehabilitator, but I have done it for other folks that I work with. And I don't have a social media presence, but there's a lot of independents or small centers that do, which I fully support. But because I've taken a lot of classes from Amanda on social media, I have offered and have done that. They're like, well, we want to post this. Can you look at it? And so I'll look at it and say, hey, can you crop this picture? Or, you know, hey, I would say it this way, not this way.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, kind of give it that more educational bent. So I just want to put that out there that you don't have to be part of a larger organization to have somebody else help you.
Right.
Yeah. And even somebody that is not in wildlife rehabilitation, but is in communication can help you if you give them some guidelines of what you're trying to say.
Yeah,
That kind of thing. But when you, so those kinds of posts you can schedule, you can have them looked at, you can have them reviewed. Like this podcast is a recording. So, you know, there's going to be a few edits, right? There's, you know, that kind of thing. It gets reviewed before it gets put out. But live streaming is live.
It's live.
So talk a little bit about that. Pros, cons, like, don't like, beneficial, not, what?
I think it's great. And I think everyone here has just gotten so used to it. I don't know that anybody worries about it much anymore. I remember when we first started doing some live stream stuff, people were like, oh my gosh, what if I don't know, stumble over my words or sneeze or whatever. Yeah, like anything. And I'm like, it'd be fine. Like, just let's just try and avoid swearing loudly and that'd be good. So I used to, in the early days, when I would like do a walking live tour with my phone, I would tape a fluorescent sign on my chest and on my back that said, caution, live stream in progress, just so people could see me coming or going.
Perfect.
So, So I do. So maybe that's a pro tip.
That's a pro tip.
Yeah. We have a lot of students here, students and volunteers. So like maybe the staff know what I'm doing, but the students may not have necessarily gotten an email or a message or whatever. So just to warn them not to, you know, be really awkward or whatever. Yeah, but other than that, I mean, we've done a lot of different live stream stuff. Some of it has been with a phone. It's like, oh, we're going to give you a tour of our black bear complex while no bears are in it. Like, here's a special time of year where we have access to it and we'll show you what it's like. So it's just like a live walking tour. We also will do some kind of like fancier production utilizing Facebook as well, where we're you know, sitting behind a laptop and like pulling in some camera feeds or some audio or a Zoom call and use Facebook to push it out, which can be fine too. And, you know, sometimes people stumble over their words or they sneeze, and that's fine because we're all humans. I don't know. I think it's more interesting anyway, of just when people can talk like they're having a normal conversation, not always having to be super polished and rigid, I guess.
Sure. Do you have somebody that kind of narrates, you know, like, you know, you're behind the camera and somebody else is examining the baby squirrel, for example, and the person behind the camera said, oh, and if you see now, this is a great young gray squirrel, and hey, Amanda, can you tell us a little bit about the history of this squirrel? I mean, do you do that? And then that's the person that also maybe takes the live stream questions that come in.
I think we haven't necessarily done one quite like that recently anyway. I think it's more common that we're doing like a live tour where it's just like me walking and talking and showing on my phone. Or we do regular hospital cam every month. And the cool thing with that now is that it's the camera is hung in our clinic, so it oversees our treatment area and you can see all the hustle and bustle, and it's a camera that like pans and tilts and zooms, and you can like really feel like you can peer over the shoulders of the veterinarians and all of that. But that's one of the programs that we do using our, what I think of as our produced programs, where we're sitting at, you know, maybe Connor and I are doing this, you know, my coworker Connor, are sitting at a computer and one of us is pulling in a camera feed that we're watching through our internal network, and we're capturing that and pumping it into this program. And then we're there providing audio commentary of like, oh, and now we see, it's almost like sports casting. Like now we see Dr. Kara getting out that squirrel. And that, so it's, that is a really nice way for us to do it. I think our outreach department is pretty in tune with everything that goes on back there. Certainly not, we can't answer every technical medical question there is, but that's usually not what people are asking anyway. So we can say, oh yeah, that's a turtle that came in yesterday. Or actually we have no idea what turtle that is because we have 42 of them. But did you know that, you know, turtles come in because blah, blah. So it's nice because, it doesn't disturb the vet staff. So it's not us being in the clinic talking necessarily. It's just us at our desks talking, while they're doing the work. So it's, we're not creating a lot of extra voices and stuff.
Okay, excellent. Well, thanks for that little aside, because I was like, oh, let's talk about live streaming.
Yes.
Yeah, the Rep Center doesn't do much live streaming. We've done some, but not a lot. But the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center has done some, and it's really been fun to watch.
It is.
They do it well, just like you guys do it very, very well. And it's not just, it's, I hesitate to say entertaining, but it is engaging.
Yeah.
And you get that you never see.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're not in wildlife rehabilitation, but even if you are, it's fun to see behind the scenes at another facility.
Yeah.
So.
And it doesn't always have to be talking or narrating or a whole big thing. We have done a few education ambassador live streams where it's pretty simple. And maybe we're talking at first of like, oh, this is Maggie, our peregrine falcon, and it's her hatch day and we're going to give her a present. And then I'm going to literally put my phone in her enclosure and leave and let her do her thing. Bye. So we've done that. I was just telling our students last week that one year there's a national day for everything. there's a National Egg Day, like eggs.
Okay.
I don't know. Sure. So for National Egg Day one year, I brought in one of my little chicken eggs from my backyard flock, and we gave it to one of our education rat snakes, and because rat snakes eat eggs. Talk about like the most low-key program we have ever done. It was like, this is Albus. He is a rat snake. He's been here, blah, blah, blah. Here's why he's with us. Happy Egg Day. We're going to give him an egg. Boop. So again, like left the phone in there with him. It took him an hour to eat it. I think he kept like approaching it, and then he'd like boop it around, and then he'd try, and then he's like, I don't know. But people kept watching it. So we were like, maybe we should end it. Like it's going on so long, but people are like, oh my God, no. And I think it's, you know, I don't know that everyone was sitting there in rapt attention on their phones or anything, but I do think that's the sort of fun thing that sometimes if you have a desk job, you might be able to pull that up and just kind of watch something that's really passive as you're like doing paperwork or whatever. It's just kind of a
I think vibe. That's why nest cams are so popular,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You can have a female kestrel incubating eggs, and that's on one screen, and you're doing your other stuff on the other screen. Oh my gosh, she moved, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I would totally have it up
the
whole time. Oh my gosh, starting to swallow the eggs.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm so easily entertained. But I love natural history. So that's, and I
yes.
love, so that's, and I think a lot of people do. They're very interested in that. So, but, oh, thank you for that. Because that's, oh, that's great. So what are, do you have for back to social media? Oh, real quick. What social media is the Wildlife Center of Virginia on? You're on Facebook. You're on Instagram. Are you on TikTok?
We're on TikTok. We're on Twitter, YouTube. And we have an old Pinterest page. We don't do much with that. But it's there. So
just in case, do you create a post like, let's say for Facebook and then adapt it for all the other platforms? Do you just do original content on all the platforms all the time?
There is some overlap there. Yeah, we do have the way we have it currently set up is we have a couple of staff members who have like a primary responsibility for different platforms. I think but some of those messages, you know, make it onto both Instagram and Facebook. Some are just Instagram, some are just Facebook, and it really depends on the platform. So, you know, Instagram is all about photos, but Facebook is also very link driven. You know, it's a lot newsier these days with like, here's a link to a story that's on our website or a link to the, you know, a birding organization about a specific bird or whatever. So, and you just can't make those types of posts on Instagram. So some of the content is original to each platform. If it's suitable for that, I really do like using Facebook as a traffic driver to our website too. So, you know, we may, you know, if we have like a new bear cub that was admitted or something, we'll typically write up a story on our website about it. And then I'll grab an image and post it on Facebook and like grab a little blurb from the story and then say for the full patient story and to see this bear on critter cam, come on over to the website. So I'm always trying to like lure people back to the website because the websites are, you know, it's like one of my children here at the center, but
well, it's hefty. It's got a lot of information and how more you can get involved and whether it's donation or volunteering or whatever. So, do your social media, do you expect them to raise money? Do you use them for raising money?
We make donation requests on there intermittently. I never push really hard for it because I don't think that's the point of social media. People are not picking up their phones mindlessly to say, let me get on Facebook to see where I can put my money today. They're getting on Facebook to say, what's up? What's the news? What's up with my people? Where are the funny cat videos?
Or the pictures. And I use Instagram for pictures too, but man, I definitely, if I'm just waiting in line at the grocery store, I might be just scrolling Facebook just to look for pictures.
Yeah. So, you know, there are fundamentally people use Facebook, and you can think about this for yourself. Everyone think about why you use social media. But they use it to get information, to stay up to date with friends and family, to be entertained, and usually to, like, get help and share help. So nowhere in that is I use social media to do money things. Now, that's not saying don't ever talk about fundraising. I just do it sparingly on there because I think it gets really old and can get really overwhelming if you're constantly like, here's a squirrel, give us money. Here's an eagle, give us money. You know, we do use it periodically if we're doing a specific fundraising drive. It's really useful for the, like, non-monetary donations. So if we're ever running short on, I think last year we were, like, super short on laundry. So we just needed some sheets and towels. So it was like, hey, local people, if you have old sheets and towels, can you drop them off here? I'm a little cautious with it. Currently at this very moment in time, we're a little bit short on newspapers. And we put the call out first to, like, our volunteers and our transporters and staff, of course. I was like, let me know if I should put it on Facebook, but oh my gosh, word of warning, like, we might just be swimming in it. So we'll do those types of requests. And yeah, certainly we'll, you know, in conjunction with our development department, if we're doing, like, a spring appeal, we'll probably have some social media component on there as well. But I just really like to mix it up on social media, particularly Facebook. So, Facebook is where I spend most of my time for the Wildlife Center, and is our oldest platform that we've been on, right? Because it's one of the oldest. So I really like to mix it up in terms of, like, here's a cute photo, here's a nice link to an article, here's a nice link to a Wildlife Center website article or patient story, here's a nice link to this external article website that I just think is really interesting and it's about wildlife and you should see it, sort of thing. So, you know, links and photos and videos as well. I just really, and then stick a donation post in there too. I just try and really mix it up so it's not the same thing all the time.
Okay. All lots of good pro tips in there. Holy buckets. Lots. Do you have, like, I don't want to say quick, but an example of what you would consider a good social media post, and then maybe an example of one not as good?
Sure. Let's see. Well, if I'm thinking of good social media posts, for us, and again, my default is I'm going to think about a good Facebook post in particular, because it's what I'm most familiar with. For us, hands down, the best posts are always what I consider to be educational meme photos. And when I say meme, I mean it's like some sort of graphic, you know, it's an image, but it has some text on it and a photo usually. So we have at the center a lot of helpful memes for, like, what to do if you find a baby rabbit, what to do if you find a baby bird, don't release balloons, don't litter, but, you know, all that. It's skunk season, they're crossing the road, that sort of thing. So all of those memes are a nice image, it's branded with the Wildlife Center's, you know, branding materials and our little logo. There's, you know, usually a headline, there's a nice big image of whatever we're talking about, and there's a little bit of text, and sometimes it's hard because you really got to, like, strip down that text to not be too wordy. So those by far do the best for us. And I think it's interesting because that fits right in with that reason of why people use social media. One of those reasons why people use social media is to get information, to get help, and to, like, help inform others. So I think that fits right in there where people are like, oh my gosh, look at that. Yeah, watch out for skunks on Valentine's Day because it's breeding season. Yes. Like, either, I think people are like, that's why I saw skunks on the road or why I've seen so many recently. And then they share it. Or maybe they know it and they're like, I know this thing because I know a lot about wildlife. And they share it with their friends and family. Because we're all, you know, we're all also cultivating this online persona on our social media accounts by the things that we post or share or whatever, right? That says something about you. You want your friends and family to know that you care about XYZ.
Yeah, everybody. It's always the animal stuff that I share.
Right? Yeah.
Dude, you're talking about those memes. It's like, I totally not only save those posts, but I do share them. That is one of the things.
Yeah, you do. That's Gail's social media persona. You share a lot about wildlife education. And people, you know, so people cultivate that. And I think that's the sort of inference they like, saying, hey, did you know, here is this helpful thing to you in case you encounter this. So to me, those are always really good posts. I mean, they're, of course, good posts for us organizationally, too, because it's fitting in with our mission of, we are here to educate people, to teach the world about wildlife and the environment. So we want to put out a lot of good educational content that's going to help people and help wildlife. So that's an example of a good post.
I'm just going to throw it out there.
There's
actually a Facebook group now on something like this. There's supposed to be crappy photos, crappy bird photos. That's the page. They want just the wingtip or the tail or whatever. I mean, that's what they want because it's hilarious. But I think if you're going to use photographs on a Facebook post, they should be in focus.
Yeah.
You know, they should, like you mentioned earlier, showcase best practices, things like that. I don't know if you have anything else as far as like what you like, if there's definite don'ts, maybe we could just bleed into that. That's a bad phrase, but you know, not maybe necessarily an example of a bad or a challenging post, but maybe any definite don'ts on social media, like blurry pictures.
Yeah. I mean, I think in going along with the don't post this thing too, I think it's like, let's not badmouth each other or throw shade at each other, right? Like, obviously don't openly be like, well, I think Gail's rehab operation is garbage. Like, that would be very overt. Don't do that. I don't know. It's a small community. It's a small world. Like, we get it. If you're being subtle and kind of like, other wildlife places in our state don't blah, blah, blah. Like, everyone can read the passive aggressive insinuation. It doesn't feel good. It's not really a nice working together feel. So I think we try and be really respectful of everyone. Especially, you know, if you don't know all of the information. But I do see some organizations doing that, where it's just kind of like taking a little jab at other people in the field, which it's not a good look, honestly. I'll tell you, it's much more memorable to me when now I'm getting back into the do's, but it's much more memorable to me when organizations share wildlife content from sister organizations in the field. It's actually something that I think a lot of people are afraid of, like, oh my gosh, if me as the Wildlife Center on Facebook shared a post from the Raptor Center, like, oh my gosh, what if all of our followers instantly were like, oh my God, I'm going to give all of my money to the Raptor Center and I'll stop donating to you. But I think that's kind of the mental exercise that people go through of like, don't tell them that there's a Raptor Center, because we have to, you know, safeguard our supporters. But to me, it's actually really lovely to see people working together, and it actually makes me think even better of them. And I have seen people do that really well, where they're just like, our friends at the Wildlife Center of Virginia shared this great information. Like, yeah, we're not going to try and pretend like, you know, we came up with it or whatever. I don't know. So I love to see organizations working together and giving shout outs to each other. So I'll do it right now. Rockfish Wildlife Sanctuary, which is, yeah, they're great. Yeah. They are. We are about 45 minutes from them, and we work with them really closely. They tend to send us a lot of injured cases because we have the vet staff here, and in turn, we tend to send them a lot of healthy babies that just, you know, get more time and special attention from their rehab crew there. So it's really lovely, and we're, you know, in constant communication. But they also have a really lovely social media presence, and they have a nice voice. Again, coming back to that person at the party analogy, I think of them that way, like they seem warm. I think writing is so interesting too, right? Like that you can write something and have it seem warm or cold or distant or whatever. But like I see them and it's like, oh, it's warm, it's inviting, it's fun, it's educational. They make some jokes in there sometimes. They often like give shout outs to other organizations and interact in the comments of like, oh, we think, you know, I posted something about our library tour that our outreach coordinator is doing this summer. He has a ton of library programs. And Rockfish was there in the comments, like doing a little hand clap emoji for us. And I'm like, that's really nice. So,
it is. I mean, you know, they're paying attention and they're like, yeah, support. Yeah, support.
Yeah. And it's not just us. I don't want to make like, oh, I like them because they do our stuff. But I see them with the Blue Ridge Wildlife Center, which is another organization in the state of Virginia. And they're sharing their posts and they're like, oh, we love, you know, Blue Ridge. And it's just so lovely to see people working together. So.
Oh, right. No, I agree. And we are so much better together than we are separate. And you're right. All of us are representing all of us.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Not just you are representing you, but you're representing all of us because we're a small niche. And not a lot of people in reality really know about wildlife rehabilitation.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway.
So I would also say one of my other don'ts then in talking about this field of rehabilitation and representing is also be sure that you're not posting anything that is in violation of your permit conditions or could be construed that way. I mean, obviously, like, don't violate your permit conditions. But, I mean, I think about things like PPE and different, you know, different states have very different permit conditions in some places. With our permitting, our state permitting conditions here in Virginia still states that for mammals, if we are treating mammal species, you need to be wearing a face mask still because of COVID. And there's a lot, there's some additional PPE stuff with fawns because of the
fawns
deer reservoir for
COVID. You have to be very careful, but so that's really good points.
So, you know, if I'm going to be posting a fawn photo on Facebook, those people better be in full PPE gear because yikes, otherwise we're in violation. I mean, obviously they should be doing that anyway, but I think that also comes into play with, having or knowing your organization's social media guidelines. You know, if you are a larger organization, do you have some sort of guidelines for your staff and your volunteers to adhere to? The answer is yes, you should have some sort of guidelines, even if they're brief for you. But like having a set of guidelines, I think, is a pretty reasonable and expected thing at this point. You know, if you're a rehabber of one and you are doing all of this yourself, then you set your own guidelines. Argue with yourself over that. But I think in the mirror, have a discussion. But, you know, we have more of a no posting policy here because we have so many students coming through here. And knowing that state agencies and federal agencies are on social media and they do look at these things, I just don't want anything to be taken out of context. Prior to us having a policy, a student at one point posted something of like, oh, here's an education peregrine falcon at the Wildlife Center. And it was a bird that was in training. We did not have an education peregrine falcon. We had a bird that I was assessing and starting to work with, and it was living in our protected education area, not on display, but in an enclosure where I could work with him. And I was like, holy goodness, that's not, like, he's not our education peregrine falcon. We don't have an illegal education peregrine falcon that's not on our permits. You know, he's was we weren't doing anything wrong. It was just that like out of context thing. So,
right. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you have any other pro tips or any last words? That doesn't sound right. yeah, no, don't take it like that, Amanda. Anything that you would like to make sure that people go away with, if thinking about social media?
Let's see. I think a few other pro tips would be, look at your analytics. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of these platforms have good analytics that you can see what, you know, who are your followers, what are they doing, but most importantly, what are your most engaging posts? So I make it a habit of every month, I just do this once a month, because otherwise you can go down some deep wormholes there. Nobody has time for that. But look, you know, I look at it monthly and just of like, how did we do in May? What was our most popular post? What got the most engagement? And there's a lot of different metrics on there in terms of reach and post clicks and engagement and this and that, whatever. Engagement is really the key factor, because you want people interacting with your posts. That's our ultimate, you know, goal there. So what's the most engaging post? And, you know, I can tell you that those like infographics or educational memes that we post are some of our best content, because I know I have seen it in the analytics. I could tell you last month we posted a photo of a mother opossum with her 8 babies crawling on her, including one sitting right on top of her head. It was adorable. That was our most engaging post. I kind of expected it because it was a really great photo. So to me, I think analytics helps tell you what's worked well so that you can like keep doing it and really decide what's worth your time. So that would be one. Otherwise, I think, you know, have fun with it. It is ultimately, it's educational, it's professional, but it is also supposed to be fun. So, you know, test out some things. If you're still trying to figure out your voice, you know, try some different angles on there, try some different post shares. Obviously stay within the realm of what's going to be appropriate for you and your organization, but don't forget to have fun with it, I think. I think the interesting thing there is that what is fun on one platform may be very different on a different platform. And this comes into like, I don't think you necessarily have to create brand new original content for every singular thing that you're doing. Again, that's just a lot of time. But I think you can repackage, you know, the same core content, but just kind of present it a little bit differently depending on your audience. So keep in mind, again, your analytics will tell you more about your audiences, but keep in mind that Facebook generally tends to be an older audience. So I know for ours, we're talking about primarily women, and a lot of them are like 60 plus. Not everybody, but that's just that Facebook's a little bit older. TikTok is a lot younger. Instagram seems to be a lot of 30-somethings. So I think it's important to know that, because some of your content may hit differently. I know for Facebook that obviously I use my own judgment, and I have a hand in the, you know, while I'm publishing the content, so of course I have a hand in it. But sometimes I'll try and throw things in there that I personally find really interesting or amusing that obviously fit within this field of wildlife rehabilitation. But I'll tell you, I think you follow False Knees on Facebook. Have you seen the False Knees comics, cartoons? My God. If not, immediately after this, I'm going to share a bunch to your Facebook page.
Okay, you do that. You do that, because I'm not familiar. I'm familiar with like birds with arms and the bad bird pictures. Yeah. I love that because it's entertaining. But no, I want to see False Knees. So go
False
ahead.
False Knees. So it's, how would I describe it though? It's like a, you know, they set it up in like little comic strip frames. It's really lovely drawings. They're really cute. And they're typically, are they always about birds? I think. I'm thinking of a lot of bird ones. Sometimes the humor is subtle in it, or just kind of, it really appeals to me. Like, I like it a lot. I think they're funny. And some of them, I'm just like, this is the funniest thing ever. So I've shared a couple of those on our Facebook page, and man, our audience does not find them funny. So I'm like, Okay, Amanda, noted. Like, we just have different senses of humor. That's okay. Again, use your analytics. But, you know, would that do better on a different platform? Maybe. You know, thinking about the newcomer of the bunch, TikTok, the relatively young social media platform, and that's, I mean, that gets very different. You could really push the boundaries there in terms of, like, being goofy and fun, because that's what that platform is. It's, like, really entertaining. So, again, you don't want to be inappropriate with any of your posts or, like, violate any of your own boundaries or whatever. But I think you can be a lot more goofy and fun on there, because the audience is very different. So.
Oh, true. Oh, really great ideas. Lovely ideas and great do's and don'ts and lots of pro tips. I just love it. For those of you, maybe here's the last question. The last question is, should you be on social media with your wildlife rehabilitation?
I think you should be. It's still where the people are. There's a lot of people on social media, again, varying demographics and numbers on different platforms out there. But I do think, whether you love it or hate it, people do spend a lot of time there. So I think that can be a really valuable opportunity to represent our field and provide some really good education.
Okay. Oh, I think that's a perfect place to end it. Amanda Nicholson, I can't thank you enough. This was a lot of fun. I hope all our listeners thought it was as fun as I did. I had a great time. And
awesome.
Thank you very, very much. And we'll hopefully be talking to you soon.
Yes, thank you. I had so much fun. Happy to share. And if anyone really wants to nerd out more on social media, I'm at the Wildlife Center of Virginia. You can look me up. Or just ask Gail. And thank you so much for having me. And let's do it again sometime.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Wildlife Rehabilitation from Rescue to Release Season 2. That was one of my go-to experts on managing social media for wildlife rehabilitation and conservation, Amanda Nicholson. Amanda joined me via Zoom from the Wildlife Center of Virginia, where she serves as Senior Vice President. Be sure to check out our show notes for links to articles she has written and also to the Call of the Wild Conference for Wildlife Rehabilitation. This is a can't-miss opportunity for continuing education. Wildlife Rehabilitation from Rescue to Release is a production of Partners for Wildlife, working hand-in-hand with wildlife rehabilitators and veterinarians to improve the welfare of orphaned, ill, and injured wildlife. Our executive producer is me, Gail Buell. I'm the Partnership Coordinator for Partners for Wildlife at the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine's Raptor Center. To learn more about the Raptor Center and Partners for Wildlife, visit raptor.umn.edu. Our producer is Kirk Clocky. Special thanks to our guest, Amanda Nicholson. Also to Partners for Wildlife and the Raptor Center at the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine. And that's our show. Hope you'll join us again next time.